This episode of Where Did the Road Go is brought to you in part by our Patreons. If you want to become a patron, go to wheredidtheroadgo.com. And now our show.
Transmission start. Welcome to Where Did the Road Go? Join us as we wander off the path and explore lost history, consciousness, the paranormal, unexplained mysteries, alternative thought, and much more. We are present on the web at wheredidtheroadgo.com. Now here is your host, Soraya.
Welcome to this edition of Where Did the Road Go? And I figured we had to do something on this story, so I brought in Timothy Renner and Joshua Cutchin.
Hello.
He drug me in from a hospital.
Yeah, yeah. we said, Josh, you have to do it. I don't care if you're waiting for your babies to come.
There's been requests for Strange Familiars to do something on this, so I'm going to say this counts. So I'll just point everybody from Strange Familiars to this episode, and this will count as Strange Familiars doing something on it as well.
And I forget where I saw this initially. I think it just popped up in my feed, and someone pointed me to it. North Carolina 3-year-old Casey Hathaway says he hung out with a bear after he vanished from his grandmother's backyard. And of course, the thing about this is it is pure missing 411 material. There are things that Dave has said about different cases that I disagree with, and eventually we'll probably do a show on some of that. Like, I think he has some stuff wrong, but none of that applies really to this case. This case is purely the type of stuff he was looking into very early on. He has some similar cases in his first two books. And this was a 3-year-old who vanished from his grandmother's backyard. And he was the last in line because all the other kids came in and then they realized he hadn't come in with them. And this is down in Raleigh, North Carolina. And people have been saying...
Well, Raleigh's a bit 100 farther west.
100 miles southeast of Raleigh. Okay, I just saw Raleigh. All right.
Yeah, it's practically on the coast. I say this just because I'm a North Carolina native.
Right.
But in fact, it was my mom who actually sort of hit me to this particular case in terms of, you know, it being sort of anomalous. But yeah, it's startlingly close to the coast. It's really, really, really close to the coast, which is something that I feel like you don't see in a lot of missing 411 cases.
True. Well, a lot of them are around water. So water is a common commonality. So,
but usually, like, sort of moving bodies of water, like lakes, but like around like the coast is not something that you really run into a lot of.
That's true. The kid was missing for 3 days.
I think that's right.
I want to double check here. And he was returned healthy, smiley, and talking. Said he hung out with a bear for 2 days. She wrote, "God sent him a friend to keep him safe." And it's interesting to me how they just accept that. They don't really take into what do you mean a bear kept you safe. The little one was lost in the woods for days in the freezing temperatures, rain, dark nights, and wind. He told us that his best friend, the bear, was with him to keep him safe. Thanks to God's mercy, he came home to us alive and well. The toddler told a similar tale to law enforcement, who are still unsure how Casey remained mostly healthy in the woods for 2 days without food or water. Okay, so it was 2 days. He didn't say how he was able to survive and all that. Craven County Sheriff Chip Hughes told WCTI. He did say he had a friend in the woods and that a bear was with him. Doctors at Carolina East Medical Center spent Thursday night examining Casey, who was mostly uninjured from his time in the woods, aside from a few scrapes and bruises. He was in good condition, and I believe he's already been released. He spent his first day in the hospital eating Cheetos nuggets and watching Paw Patrol. I'm not sure what Paw Patrol is.
I thought that was incredibly cute, though. He was hanging out with his best friend, Bear, and he went and watched Paw Patrol.
Now, what's Paw Patrol?
I don't know.
It's an animated series with, like, cartoon dogs doing, like, rescue, first responder stuff.
Okay. All right. And they say they don't think he was abducted at any point. And he was found tangled up in some brush and calling out for his mother. And he was about 40 or 50 yards into a wooded area. I don't know how far from home. It doesn't say how far from home he was.
they said he wasn't far from where he was originally disappeared from. I think they said about 100 yards, so it must have been close to his grandmother's house where they found him.
Okay. So a lot of that hits David's criteria on the nose. Person was found. I'm assuming they searched that area looking for him. He's gone for 2 days without any signs of, you know, injury from, you know, wandering around the woods in the dark and the cold and the rain and everything else. There's bad weather, you know, because it was raining and windy and freezing temperatures. He shouldn't have survived, basically. And yeah, so I mean, there's and where he was found, too, tangled up in some brush. These are all points that David makes in some of his best cases.
Well, what's been really interesting to me is how this case has really gotten a lot of like national media attention.
Yeah.
In ways that other ones haven't.
Very true. Yeah, it's everywhere. But you don't, you know, like the cases David has in his books that talk about, you know, oh, they were taken care of by a bear or a dog, like a dog man or something like that. Those cases are from way back. They're not recent cases. This is an anomaly as far as a recent case goes. And I think,
yeah,
I think a lot of people are just going, it was Bigfoot, and we don't know what it was. I mean, let's be honest. We have no idea what the bear was.
Right. I mean, I don't think they'll ever let anybody near this kid to question him, but it would be interesting to ask him things like, did the bear walk on two legs?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where did you go with the bear? You know, was there a place you went?
Because
certainly someone his age knows whether something walks on two legs or four and could tell you if he was inside or outside. You know?
Right, right.
So it is interesting because I have read, and of course I've read conflicting literature since I read this, but I read at one point that Eastern North Carolina was one of the one of the most populous black bear sites on the Eastern Seaboard, if not the most populous. Hmm. So I know it's definitely a thing. Even as, like, you know, I'm a North Carolina native, even as far as sort of like central west North Carolina, they're getting more and more black bear sightings in places that are really basically suburbia. So it's really starting to become a little bit of a problem. You know, looking at this, a lot of people will do the knee-jerk Bigfoot thing, and I think that's sort of it should not be a surprise with me and Tim's new book. I feel like that's a little bit silly. It definitely sounds a little bit like that. But I think that the people who... But basically, I think the people who are like really just saying, oh, it was Bigfoot, are ignoring a lot of other possible things that if you really engage with an animist worldview might be equally invested in, like sort of interacting with a young lost child in the wilderness. By which I mean sort of like, you know, genus loci, elemental spirits, that sort of thing. Not to say faithful, but, you know, that's my sort of my ballywick. but you know, I empathize, obviously, because I'm writing a book about this, but I empathize with the Bigfoot thing, but it just seems a little bit hasty to jump to that conclusion. That's most of what I'm seeing is, you know, because, I mean, there's a great tradition, both European and, you know, Native American, of anthropomized bears, like, of mm-hmm. bears having their own sort of spirit and bears actually representing their own sort of spirit category that I don't think should be sort of written off whole cloth because you have a hard on about large hairy hominids.
I like the mood setting child noises in the background, Josh.
Dude, I'm trying so hard. I had to leave and like,
it's fine. Walk around the lobby.
I think it adds to the mood.
And it says, yeah, he was. Rescue workers were following up on a tip about a crying child when they discovered Casey. But again, it seems like they should have found him if he was that close to the property.
Yeah. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And again,
yeah, he went somewhere else.
Yeah, that's one of Dave's original criteria that holds strong. And the very fact he survived is mind-boggling. I mean, 2 days out in that type of temperature, he's a, you know, three-year-old. It chances of him returning alive, being out in the wilderness, is next to nothing.
Well, and, you know, people see North Carolina, they think that it's going to, you know, it's like, oh, the deep south, they don't really have cold temperatures, but it's not the deep south. It's the south, but it's not the deep south. Like, they've had snow, and, you know, I have not had, we're supposed to have some sort of monumental snowfall in Georgia today, and we did not at all. So the idea that North Carolina is like, you know, that sort of like Mississippi, Alabama sort of climate just doesn't hold water. It can be pretty damn brutal this time of year, that's for sure.
So the question is, what protected him and how?
His best friend, the bear.
Right, but was it an actual bear? I mean, it seems, if I'm not mistaken, most bears are hibernating at this point.
And maybe the kid was a fan of that old 1970s, or was it 80s show about, what was it, Allison, BJ and the Bear, with the guy had the monkey in the truck.
That's not a bear.
But his name was Bear, and he was a monkey. And then the kid saw this monkey-like thing and said, oh, it's Bear from BJ and the Bear.
I did a little bit of research, and I'm not finding, someone had suggested that maybe the bear took care of him as a, you know, as one of its own, but I'm not.
Yeah, I saw someone talk about that too. I mean,
I haven't seen any. I've been looking for examples of that happening, and I haven't been able to find anything.
Well, let me draw up some down east, because that's what my dad was born in, down east. So down east folk knowledge on y'all. So the kid was found in Craven County. Craven County's one of the, I'm not sure if it's the county seat or not, but it's one of the most well-known cities in Craven County, is on the lake. It's called New Bern, which was named after Bern, Switzerland, which, of course, Bern, what does that mean, Tim?
Josh, you put me on the spot.
Bear, Bern.
Oh, Bern. Gotcha. It means bear, of course. Yeah.
Part of Craven...
Oh, we lost Josh.
Forest, which we all know about.
Say that again, Josh.
I said part of Craven County includes the Croatoan National Forest.
Oh.
And sort of we all know about the famed lost colony.
Of Roanoke,
this is
right.
Not anywhere near that. Really, I mean, like, you're looking at, like, you know, Manteo, you know, that sort of area. On the Outer Banks, but still, it's compelling, and there's a large national forest near there too. So I think that should give people some pause as well.
So apparently, the bear experts say that doesn't happen.
Coming out of hibernation?
He says
bears nursing.
Yeah, bear experts are not convinced, or at least that's what they say. Chris Severhini, bear researcher at the University of Montana, insists that Hathaway made the whole thing up. Wild bears aren't friends with people. I don't want to say he's not telling the truth. He obviously thinks he's seen things and maybe got a teddy bear at home, but I've seen no evidence anything like that has ever happened.
See, that's what my thought was, like, I didn't see anybody go to, oh, he found a stuffed bear in the woods, and that's what he was talking about. I was sure somebody would go there, and I didn't see that.
Yeah, and he didn't go there. He's just saying that's, you know, he's sure he hasn't. He also said, I don't want to cast aspersions on the child, but I think the little boy had a fantasy. The bear wouldn't feel sorry for him, thinking he's alone. That's ascribing human characteristics on wild animals, which is
anthropomorphized, man.
Yeah, something like that. Ism. Ism.
So while this gentleman is, and I wouldn't, you know, deign to assume that he's not quite accurate, scientifically, folklorically, he's way off the mark.
Sure.
I mean, there's tons of folklore stories. I mean, like, I think it's like monkeys, wolves, and then bears in terms of folklore stories about animals adopting human beings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But are they actual animals? That's the question.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, I'm in this weird headspace nowadays where, you know, Jungian archetypes make more sense to me than anything else. So need they be actual bears, you know?
Well, so I would say it's unlikely that the kid was saved by an actual bear, like a typical brown, you know, because A, they're hibernating. B, they don't do that. There don't seem to be any cases in history of them doing that. So what protected this kid that he thought was a bear and was able to keep him warm and safe for 2 days?
My thought would be like your best chance of a bear doing that for you know, what they would see as a cub of another species would be right after it had its own cubs. And don't bears have cubs in the spring? Like, this wouldn't this be like the complete wrong time for that?
Yes.
Yeah. It seems completely out of bear nature as you know, as far as I'm going. And in fact, you know, black bear attacks on humans are way up.
Well, their environment's probably getting encroached on.
That's part of it. And I read something a while back where it said that they think that they're kind of learning that for the most part, people don't carry guns anymore. And that, like, oh, these things are, they're kind of tasty and they don't carry those things that go boom anymore.
Nice.
Well, you know, I speak with a degree of authority just because I recently drove through Eastern North Carolina, the latter half of 2018. It's a spooky place. Like, you know, comparing Eastern North Carolina to Western North Carolina in terms of populace, I mean, obviously Western North Carolina has the mountains and stuff. But East North Carolina, it's not as, the terrain's not as unforgiving, but you have long stretches where you do not see any houses. Mm. And you're just in the middle of this flat, like, these flat forests. And it's got sort of, honestly, I think it has a really sort of creepy vibe to it, even though it doesn't have a really robust tradition. I mean, you've got some stuff around, some stuff in East North Carolina that's worth considering. The Beast of Bladenboro, I don't know if you're familiar with that, Tim. But it was an alleged sort of like cat-like monster that sort of exsanguinated livestock in Eastern North Carolina. Mm-hmm. There are rumors of a banshee tradition that was imported over to the Tar River of Eastern North Carolina, which is sort of notable because it's like the only sort of fairy tradition in the South that I'm really aware of. But there's not, like, besides that, like, the Croatoan stuff, and, like, the Outer Banks are sort of, you know, riddled with weird sort of ghost folklore, but there's not a lot of, like, weirdness, not a lot of Bigfoot lore that comes out of this part of the country. I have stumbled upon some Bigfoot stories here and there, specifically one or two stories around Fort Bragg in Eastern North Carolina, but it's not like if I heard this story, and it was from Western North Carolina, where you've got like dozens upon dozens of Bigfoot stories. It would have a different quality to me than this one does. But there's something about this one that just doesn't sit well with the Bigfoot thing with me, because I just haven't heard a lot of Bigfoot stories from Eastern North Carolina. As weird as Eastern North Carolina is, it feels much more like a haunted landscape than sort of a Bigfooty landscape, if that makes any degree of sense at all.
So what county did you say this was, Josh?
This was, oh, crap.
Where the kid was?
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same county as Craven County. That's what it is. Yeah.
So, Josh, what in, like, fairy lore and stuff is there that would match up to any of these things that this kid experienced?
Well, fairies. I mean,
right, but specific story wise, like, what elements fit the fairy lore?
I mean, outside of how much missing 411 lore fits fairy lore in general, you know, the thing that I've partially been really trying to wrap my head around with this project with Tim is the fact that as I'm proud to announce, size doesn't matter, ladies. And that if you look at so much fairy lore, you're looking at, like, a lot of these descriptions, especially the modern descriptions, are like 3-foot tall Bigfoot. So, you know, I think there's something to be said about that and sort of tying that tradition into, you know, the archetypal wildmen reports, which, you know, I mean, the wildmen, demons, witches, fairies, these are all kind of the same thing. If you really go back far enough into sort of, you know, European folklore.
You know, they're certainly connected.
Yeah.
And to quote Patrick Harper, when I asked him what he thought of Bigfoot, is that he said, Bigfoot's just a big hairy daemon.
Yeah, yeah, and in Demonic Reality actually says that you could consider Bigfoot to be a big fairy, which is, I mean, not to endlessly plug what Tim and I are doing, but it's sort of my life right now, besides waiting for children to come out.
Looking at BFRO, and, you know, they're not the be-all, end-all of Bigfoot reports, there are none for Craven County. However, there are, where did I see it, 6 for Onslow County, which is right below that.
Yeah, and I remember looking at the particular community this kid was from, and it's not at all far from, I say, the ocean. That was a little bit disingenuous. You know, North Carolina, in certain spots, you don't get the ocean because there's the Outer Banks, so you get sounds instead of the ocean. They're practically, you know, functionally the same, more or less, But this particular location where this kid went missing is very close to one of the sounds, if I recall correctly. But, you know, I feel like I'm dodging your question a little bit, Soraya, about, like, you know, what corresponds in fairy lore. I mean, so a lot of what I've looked into with, you know, fairies vis-a-vis child abduction is sort of sinister. But there are some stories where... they've taken care of children. There's one that I recall. I believe it's a Welsh story. If not, it's maybe Cornish, of a child who disappeared on a mountaintop, and the caregiver reappeared at the mountaintop and assumed it was the fairies and demanded the fairies, release the child, and he heard a voice saying that. They actually took the child into their fairy mound because the child was too cold. So that kind of corresponds to what we're talking about here, but this is not, you know, far be it for me to say this, this doesn't feel super fairy-y to me. You know, I'm not saying there's not something supernatural, but doesn't really have a lot of those sort of European hallmarks to it.
Okay.
Now, you know, regarding what Tim said about, like, you know, not a lot of Bigfoot accounts there. Like I said, I found one or two that were sort of in the same area in general. I will vouch for the fact that there are some Bigfoot accounts around Jacksonville, North Carolina. I hate to use this terminology, but it's just not a squatchy area. You know, it's not like somebody going missing in, you know, the North Carolina mountains, or someone disappearing in even in some place like, you know, eastern Texas. It's just not a place where you'd expect a lot of that to happen.
Yeah, I was surprised at the 6 sightings that are in Onslow County. Onslow? How do you pronounce that?
Yeah, Onslow, yeah.
Onslow. And Pender has 2. So there are some around there. You know, again, BFRO doesn't get every report in the world, but they're a pretty good indicator.
And there's Bigfoot sightings everywhere, you know. It's like...
That's true.
That doesn't mean a whole lot. But, like, in terms of areas that you think are really sort of characterized by that, nothing that I've ever looked into says to me this is, like, squatch territory to go all finding Bigfoot.
Apparently someone from the FBI is one of the people who announced that they had been found. And as someone pointed out, the FBI generally don't look for missing people.
Excellent point. I think, somebody drew some parallels to the Dennis Martin disappearance, which was a case in the Smoky Mountains where, the FBI was called in, and that's just not, it's not their MO.
So the first night it dropped down to 20 degrees, and the second night they had 2 inches of rain.
Wow. Yeah, he shouldn't be alive.
No, he shouldn't. I don't care how warm he might have been dressed. Huh?
Yeah, I'm ecstatic that he is. What a wonderful story in the end. Don't get me wrong, but you just don't live through that. I mean, adults...
No, Tim Renner wants children to die. Post it here.
So it says,
how would you word that? Tim Renner would have you believe.
His family searched...
Oh, man, don't get me started.
His family searched for him for 45 minutes before calling 911. He was walking in the woods back there, and we can't find him, his great-grandmother told the 911 dispatcher. The other ones come through the house but left him there, and he walked off somewhere, and we can't find him. Search and rescue teams across the state immediately came together to brave the treacherous terrain and low temperatures, hoping to find Casey. The FBI, NCIS, dozens of volunteers, and the U.S. Marine Corps also joined the effort to find the boy. Authorities deployed helicopters, drones, and canine units, Craven County Emergency Management Director Stanley Kite said. Divers also assessed nearby ponds. Casey, who authorities say weighs 25 pounds and is 2 feet 4 inches tall, was stuck out in conditions so bad that the volunteers were turned away from the search. Hughes said his team was concerned about the extreme cold as temperatures dipped near freezing, but against all odds they found him. It was folks giving us tips and leads, Hughes said. We hit every one of them and immediately it paid off. On day 3, a tip led to a search team to a spot where they were able to find the 3-year-old calling out for his mother. He was found 40 to 50 yards away. So is that 40 or 50 yards away from his grandmother's or 40 or 50? I think it's 40 to 50 yards away from where they heard the kid calling.
I seem to remember reading 100 yards away from where he was missing, you know what I mean? So, mm-hmm. So not far from where he was taken, but I could be wrong about that.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to say. Like, all these articles have slightly different information, but they're all basically saying the same thing. That came from CNN.
We just want to tell everybody that we're very thankful that you took the time out to come.
And now it's talking. Okay, now it's gone.
fake news.
Yeah,
CNN who's... if I recall correctly earlier today, was their headline for the story was, boy says bear took care of him in the wilderness and no one can prove him wrong. And I was like, what?
Wow.
Really? Well, go home, CNN, drunk.
Well, sure, because how did he survive? That's the big question. How was he able to survive? There's no reason this kid should be alive. Like Tim said, it's awesome that he is. That's fantastic. But how?
Right.
Well, I mean, but the thing is, in terms of, like, there have been at least a dozen similar cases with even more extenuating circumstances.
Yes.
It would be really interesting if this was what actually garnered national attention about this stuff.
So there's someone, one of the headlines I'm looking at, this is Circa.com. It asks, how did toddler Casey Hathaway survive his 2-day disappearance in the woods? And he says it wasn't logic that saved him. Licensed professional counselor Jane Bennett said it was his natural instincts. The instincts kick in when it comes to something like that because the little fella isn't doing a whole lot of rational thinking. His instincts kicked in. His survival instincts kicked in. Just as you don't have to tell your heart to beat, Bennett said, your body has the instinct to survive. Your instincts are just, I'm going to lay down under this tree because it's raining. You don't really give it a lot of thought. You just step under shelter. And it says, while instincts played a factor, Bennett says it's still shocking and a miracle. But that's...
Well, it's good to know. It's good to know that just those stories are still alive and well in academia.
I can barely hear you.
Sorry. Just forget what I said.
But I don't think laying down under a tree is going to get this kid to survive, 25-degree temperatures.
Yeah, does instinct suddenly give you the ability to make fire and
right.
find shelter? I mean, maybe find shelter, but it just, that's a reach. You know, that's a real reach. I'm sure there will be some expert to say, like, it's perfectly natural, absolutely. I'm not surprised, that he came out of this without frostbite or any lasting harm.
And again, this is one of those cases where, A, first of all, there's a happy ending, which, isn't always the case. B, right. there's no good explanation for this. And I think the news knows this. I think that's why they're running with it, because, you know, they realize this doesn't make any sense. This kid shouldn't be alive. This kid should not have survived. You know, and all he's saying is a friendly bear with him. And we know that it probably wasn't a bear. So something saved him, whether it be something supernatural, or I don't know what else it could really be at that point. You know, like this reeks of something odd.
And you know what it makes me think of? So there's a case I have in my Bigfoot in Pennsylvania book. It's Florence Hughes. And she goes missing 3 days, I believe. She was 2 years old. And at the time, I couldn't find any follow-up articles. Since I've actually found follow-up articles. It was Allison who said, did you ever look for a death certificate? And I said, no, I didn't. This was in the late 1800s. So Allison looked her up, and she lived. She lived to a ripe old age of her 80s or something, maybe 90s. She lived a good long time. So given that, we started digging around, and we did find some follow-up articles. And she was found a few days later, alive, pretty much unharmed. Now, this was in the summer. Mm-hmm. But it makes you wonder how many of these cases where the kids end up dying of exposure. So this little fellow that was found, you know, recently here, Casey, he could have died of exposure being tangled up in those briars, mm-hmm. if someone didn't get him soon enough. You know what I mean? So you wonder how many of these other cases started the same way, where no harm was done to the kid wherever he was, wherever he was taken, assuming he was taken somewhere.
And then no whatever one found him.
And no one found him in time.
Yeah.
And they just end up these sad stories because whatever, you know, for whatever reason, they're not found, you know, when they're brought back.
And that's another missing 411 thing that Dave had pointed out early on, is that they're often found in, you know, brambles and briars and thorn bushes and things like that. So this is a perfect example of one of those cases. Like I said, I don't necessarily agree with all of Dave's cases. Like, I think a lot of them probably have pretty simple explanations. But there's some, like this one in his books, that are real hard to get any kind of realistic, like, oh, it must have just been this type of an explanation to it.
This, by the way, will be the landmark case in my upcoming book on missing people called Missing 114, People Who Are Gone. Try to stop.
So, yeah, did you guys want to address any of the other stuff you were talking about?
Like what? It's been a topsy-turvy couple hours here.
Well, it's up to you. I'm giving you the space if you want.
I would just say that it seems like there are people from the old guard of cryptozoology who seem bent on commenting negatively on the book Josh and I are writing before they've ever read a word of it, and it sure is curious to me.
Yeah, we've been accused of distorting facts even before we even published a word, and I find that absolutely fascinating.
I knew in my gut we would experience some pushback, and that certain people who are completely devoted to the flesh and blood hypothesis, as we call it in the book, were not going to like it, and that's fine. But like Josh said, I did not expect it to come this early and this forcefully. It seems like every time Josh even mentions it in passing on Twitter, certain people have something to say about it. And then,
if I say something about the concept, that's fine. But like, don't comment on a book that we haven't even written yet without reading it. After you read it, if you disagree with what we said, I think we've made some missteps, completely valid, but mm-hmm. don't assume what we're going to say before. We're being so coy, Tim.
Well, I mean, for instance, we've been accused of explaining one unexplained with another. We're not explaining anything. We're laying out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of unexplained things and just saying, look at how much is unexplained.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I assume looking at similarities as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Well,
and you know what? What explaining the flutter is, it's the phenomenon of saying so many of the oddities surrounding Bigfoot are infrasound. Like, that's explaining one and explaining the other.
Yeah.
And that's part and parcel in Bigfootery in general. Mm-hmm. In a really obnoxious way.
Yeah. Yeah, I call it building the Rube Goldberg device, you know, to explain, you know, the how it's actually a natural thing. You got to build these great big Rube Goldberg devices rather than just saying, we don't know how they do it. We really don't.
But we're sounding like we're whinging a little bit too much. So let's not poison the well this early.
there was another news article that I saw that's not completely relevant to this, but I wanted to comment on it. It came from Forbes, and I'm assuming it's more of an opinion article, but it's titled YouTube Stops Recommending Conspiracy Videos Finally. And I don't know what YouTube is doing at this point, but they say they're changing the algorithms so that, you know, if you look up cooking chicken, all your recommendations aren't for cooking chicken. Which, I mean, makes some sense. But if I'm looking up something, I kind of want recommendations for the thing I'm looking at. But this woman who had written this Forbes article, I mean, she pretty much throws everything from flat earth to 9/11 conspiracies to not believing in that school shootings happened all into the same pot.
There you go. Yeah, those are not equatable things.
No. No, they are not. And is basically, I mean, yeah, the feeling I got off of this is that she just thinks all this stuff is nonsense and shouldn't be promoted. And as far as I'm concerned, is, I mean, okay, the school shooting thing, that can upset people. That's, you know, and, you know, that's one thing. But saying that 9/11 theories shouldn't be allowed out there, or saying that people shouldn't be allowed to believe the earth is flat, that's pushing it. You know, that's just outright censorship of things that are not hurting anyone else.
So is the thrust of the article that they're not recommending these anymore?
Correct.
How are they weeding them out?
Well, YouTube says they're not. It says examples listed of content no longer being recommended include 9/11 truther documentaries, flat earth conspiracy videos, and content peddling fake miracle cures.
Okay.
YouTube stressed in their post this would change would apply to less than 1% of all content on YouTube, and the changes will be implemented by a combination of machine learning and real people.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm not a big fan of YouTube.
I know. I'm not a huge... I've had my ups and downs with YouTube as well, as people may know.
As their algorithm makes zero sense to me with the things that I get recommended on the regular. Like, I get nothing but late night talk show recommendations. Like, do you even know me? like that's all I get. It's bizarre. And then you know, occasionally you know, look, this guy stubbed his toe or whatever, and like, I don't watch any of that kind of stuff on YouTube. So it's curious to me. Their algorithm is it makes zero sense to me.
And whereas, I mean, we don't dip into conspiracies much here, but there are conspiracies out there. That's the thing. And if you're going to silence anyone talking about a conspiracy, it's just going to make it a lot easier for that stuff to keep going.
And the worry is who decides what and where. I mean, you know, okay, flat earth is a conspiracy. Is it, though? I mean, you know, that's just a different belief system.
Right.
It's... You know, and it's easily going to extend to, you know, where does it stop? Is Bigfoot, you know, is Bigfoot nonsense? Are you going to take away those videos?
Mm-hmm.
Is are UFO videos out now? Or,
yeah,
you know, yeah. It's
and that's always like that's always the fine line with this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
The way that I always feel about, I have felt for a long time about conspiracy theories is the way. Can I meet these characters? I have an uncle, whom I suspect the stuff about him that I think is true is completely fabricated, and the stuff that I don't believe at all is completely true. And I'm of the opinion nowadays that that's the way most conspiracy theories are. is a sort of a similar ilk. I'm going to get a lot of flack for this. I'm not super bullish on 9/11 conspiracy theories, but the idea that they should be shoved to the bottom of the queue is disconcerting.
Yes.
And it's disconcerting for the same reason that, you know, I have very little positive to say about Alex Jones. The deplatforming of him across all social media was a very unsettling day for me, and I think that it's going to continue to get worse. You know, to borrow a Gordon White phrase, this is just, you know, our place in the timeline. And as long as we have people who are so married to their own tribal belief system that they will support that sort of action,
yeah,
then it's just going to get worse, and it's going to spread, and it's going to go to other people. And I mean, you know, we're making the own bed that we're lying in, I think.
As far as I'm concerned, people can believe whatever they want, and they can talk about it. And I want to, you know, like they'll say, you know, you'll get people who say, well, Nazis shouldn't have a voice. Yes, they should. And I want to know who they are. Because you don't.
God, yeah.
Lack of awareness doesn't fix the problem. Just because you take away the voice of these of someone who is potentially dangerous, it doesn't mean it goes away. It just goes into hiding. At least if a group that is potentially dangerous is vocal, you know who they are. You know where they are. You probably know what they're doing because they're probably bragging about it.
There seems to be a sort of modern idea that if you hear something you disagree with, they're going to convince you of their point or
yeah,
something. You know,
yeah.
And I'm not afraid to listen to anybody.
No.
Like, I'll listen to anybody's point and I'll make up my own mind. I never understand that. And I hope that's one thing I pass to my kids, because we will listen to, you know, I'm not a pro-Trump guy. I'm not. But we'll listen to some pro-Trump guys here and there, you know, and we don't.
You got to listen to all sides.
Yeah, yeah. It's you know.
And today, everything is so polarized that if you don't listen to both sides, you're being lied to. And you're being lied to from both sides anyway. But at least if you listen to both sides, maybe you can get some sort of balance in between about what's really going on.
I've just never had that much. I don't know. I feel like it's a lack of confidence almost in your own beliefs. Like, oh, I'm afraid somebody's going to convince me something else.
Right, right.
I'm open to being convinced. You know what I mean? I'm like, sure, convince me. I'm not so set in my ways where I'm shut down. But I'm also confident enough to know, like, no, I know what I believe, and you're not gonna win me over it to the Nazi party. It's not gonna happen.
Right, exactly. Yep.
My latest social media row is over someone saying that just because someone said that they wanted I'm going to be coy about it. Somebody said that they wanted the MAGA hat kid at the Washington Monument. They wanted him to die and his parents to die.
Mm, wow.
And then said that that wasn't an example of someone inciting violence. And I want people to die all the time. And that's not, I'm like, what the actual hell are you talking about? Like, that's an awful statement. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I've never, and like, and some people are saying, you know, I actually unfriended somebody today. If you're listening, buddy, I hope you enjoy it. But somebody said that they wanted Trump to die of an aneurysm on stage at a rally. And I'm like, that's absolutely horrible.
But
like, I've never said that about anybody.
It's not new, especially in politics.
No, but it's more transparent now than it has been in a long time.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a mess. It's not pretty out there. And people get angry so easily, and that's not
they
good.
They really do. Oh, they really do. People go from zero to... this just happened to be like a pro-Trump post that a friend of mine put up, and it was like demonstrably wrong. Like, it was just complete fake news. And I don't usually engage. I just let people be whatever they, you know, I just, my feeling on Facebook is you're not going to convince anybody to change their politics on Facebook. It's not going to happen. No one's ever done it. And it's just not going to happen. But this was so outrageously demonstrably wrong. I was just like, hey, you know, you might want to Snopes that, because that's really not. And then I got this whole lecture from the guy about how Snopes is like this liberal conspiracy to prove these websites wrong and stuff. I was like, oh my God, okay, I can't. I don't know where to meet with you on this. You know what I mean? It's just,
well, there's sort of a bias too. If something sounds like something you want to believe, you're more likely to believe it, and that goes for all of us.
Absolutely.
You know, it's human nature. What?
Like you might, you know, make up stuff about, you know, ignoring the high strangeness of Bigfoot accounts because you are really married to Bigfoot being a flesh and blood cryptid.
Yeah.
And as far as I'm concerned, high strangeness Bigfoot accounts do not rule out Bigfoot also possibly being a flesh and blood cryptid, especially in certain areas. And I've said this recently, like, you know, the Pacific Northwest, where there's plenty of room for something like that to be hidden, the Himalayas and things like that. There could easily be undiscovered creatures out there.
Here's my problem is when you have people, because cryptozoology, one of the fundamental pillars of cryptozoology is eyewitness testimony, right? I think we can all agree on that.
Yep.
Because physical evidence is thin on the ground, right? And so you're going to say, well, we should always believe witnesses except when they talk about XYZ thing that I don't agree with, and then we should throw that out. No, that's intellectually dishonest. That is fundamentally, and I don't see how that position is tenable at all, but it's incredibly popular among flesh and blood cryptozoologists. It's just, it's
belief bias.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's selectively mining information is what it is. I mean, I have found for this book we're working on very popular, like, go-to big name cases where people have just selectively edited out the weird stuff because it doesn't fit.
Yep. You know, and that happens in ufology too. I mean, like, I remember there was a handful of meetings that don't go enough as they should, and I think they're good people actually. MUFON Georgia meetings, and the last one I went to, there was some lady who had a really dramatic sighting of they always talk about, like, how big was the craft, you know, if you held a quarter at arm's length. This was like if you held a baseball at arm's length, like a really sizable sort of craft. And I asked some questions just, you know, tangentially of the witness because they were sort of showing up for the first time. You know, who was there anyone moving in and out of your house? Some very Jeff Ritzman sort of questions, right? And there was all, no. Next meeting I went to, and I talked to the MUFON guys, and like she said, and then they said, yeah, she's had some other stuff happen. There's been a bunch of ghost stuff happening in her house, and this and that. And I'm like, yep, that's par for the course, you know.
I got a Bigfoot call yesterday. I met the witness. She saw Bigfoot on Saturday. She saw two of them actually. And as I'm talking to her, I said, okay, now tell me about the other weird stuff. And she says, there's no other weird stuff. What do you mean? And then she said, as we're walking along the road where she saw it, she says, well, this mill here is, and just, you know, casually mentions, super haunted by a big white dog. There's a big white dog that haunts this mill. And then I said, well, okay, where are the weird lights? And she's like, oh, I've never seen any weird lights. 5 minutes later, she says, my car broke down, like, right over the hill there one night. And there was these weird blue lights, and I chased them, and they went away.
Nice.
And it's just like, okay, like, I knew there would be.
Yeah. And part of the problem is, especially with any of these things, whether it be ghost hunters, UFO hunters, cryptozoologists, I mean, the joke has always been, you know, the UFO hunters think the ghost hunters are crazy, and the ghost hunters think the cryptozoologists are crazy, and et cetera. But the problem is all this stuff seems to have some interconnected points. And
it's not a joke, though, Sarai. I'm like, this is... It's a reality.
I know. That's what I'm saying. The joke is that, and because it's true, and for so long, these things have had blinders on. Like, if you're a UFO guy, you only look at UFO stuff. If you're a ghost guy, you only look at ghost stuff. And they don't want to look at the other stuff that's going on because that doesn't fit. It doesn't make sense. But you can't ignore it just because it doesn't make sense. You have to make sense out of that.
Yeah, I think it's a huge problem, and cryptozoologists in general are late to the game with this because they're still really locked into proving there's a monkey and nothing weird about it. Yeah. There might be a monkey.
The latest of the game. They are so excited to sit at the big kids table that they are ignoring the fact that that's going to happen naturally. You know, in other words, I said this a long time ago, you know, cryptozoologists are the last of the Fortians who are going to start embracing stuff about consciousness, about psi, because they are so desperate for validation that they will continue to ignore that stuff at their own peril, because, like, psi studies, I would not doubt it, and I sound like one of these guys who's crowing that disclosure is imminent of the, you know, the UFO field, but I feel like psi studies in the next two decades are going to be really vindicated in a big way, because that's where the momentum is right now. And, like, if you don't see that, I don't know what to tell you. And that's going to break everything apart.
Yeah, and the thing is, psi has scientifically been proven. You know, this is stuff the government has used.
I totally agree.
And there's still people out there who will say, oh, that stuff's never been proven. Yes, it has. Yeah. Under scientific scrutiny, it has been proven. It's just that we don't know how it works.
Hello?
Hello. I said we don't know how it works.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it was John Alexander who said that there's literally more peer-reviewed literature supporting the existence of psi than there is for ibuprofen.
Right.
Which, wow. I wouldn't doubt at this point, you know.
And there's certainly more than supports the existence of things like dark matter.
Mm-hmm.
But dark matter is okay because it fits our paradigm of what we believe, whereas psi doesn't. And, you know, when you get someone like Eric Wargo, who, you know, is pointing out this, you know, the time loop thing really kind of blew my mind a little bit, because he made a lot of sense. Like, I don't necessarily believe in the static universe part of things, but the idea that what we're seeing sometimes, you know, when people see, you know, disasters and stuff, it's them seeing that stuff in the future, like seeing it on TV or seeing it. It's like, huh, that actually makes a ton of sense.
Yeah.
And we know that information travels backwards from scientific, you know, studies on this stuff. So, I mean, I think he has a piece of that puzzle.
Yeah, like the Daryl Bim studies about presentiment.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I like the fact that on this show I can have someone who's more of a materialist like Jason? Eric, I don't know why I can't always remember his name, Eric Wargo, followed by someone who is not a materialist like Jim Elvich the following week, talking about similar stuff and using similar studies to support their platforms. Because it gives you a lot of room to think about this stuff.
Yeah, I love Eric and Eric's work and the Nightshirt blog. Like, that's a linchpin of who I am in terms of, you know, respecting it. But his whole thing about, like, materialism not going anywhere, I have to push back against a little bit, because,
yeah,
I mean, even if it's like, even if it's materialism plus consciousness, it still breaks materialism. It's got aspects of what we learned. People think that when you say that materialism has to dissolve, or materialism is you know, broken by psi effects, that it means that we have to throw out everything we've learned. That's not the case. You know, it doesn't mean that if I drop my pen, it won't hit the floor. That's a tendency. But it means that the idea that the only outcome is that is completely fundamentally broken. And I don't understand why people can't reconcile that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But I've run into some, you know, dum-dums on Twitter who can't seem to figure that out.
Well, you know, I mean, for a lot of people like to use the TV analogy for consciousness, that you watch a program on TV, but it's being broadcast from somewhere else. But you could say, well, you know, you have a program on DVD and you're watching the DVD on your TV. So it's not actually coming from the outside. It's all built into, you know, one unit. But that program still had to come from somewhere.
Yeah, no, exactly. I think it's very parsimonious and probably pretty accurate.
And it doesn't mean you have to throw the TV and the DVD player out. It's, you know, I mean, the process works. But the program didn't originate inside the DVD player. It still came from somewhere else, however it got there. You know, there's more than one thing going on.
No, 100%. And I think that, good Lord, save me from saying this. I think that ufology's on top of that in a lot of ways.
I agree.
And there's still some dunderheads who are still talking about, you know, beings coming from Zeta Reticuli and stuff like that. But I feel like ufology's really done a great job in terms of embracing that research. I think that ghost hunters have been flirting with a lot of these ideas, although I think actually probably ufologists are better at it. But again, you know, cryptozoology is just not there yet. It's so 19th century it hurts.
Well,
you know, I feel like we should all be smoking from pipes and wearing hats.
But the reason for it is because if Bigfoot or other things are just animals, that's an easy explanation. Whereas with ghosts and UFOs, too much of it can't be explained in a simple... I mean, you can use the nuts and bolts UFO explanation, but I think there's just too much out there that shows that there's more going on, even if you believe in nuts and bolts stuff. And with ghost stuff, I mean, that's spirit to begin with, so...
Well, I mean, I'll never forget that, you know, my friend, you know, our mutual friend Tim Banal was talking about the number of, like, what he would call hipsters at a cryptozoology conference, you know, because... I mean, not to disparage my generation or hipsters in general, I guess. They have great food and they have great bars. You know, it's they tend to be more materialist oriented sort of folks. And I think that, you know, cryptozoology, so you can't believe in ghosts and be a materialist. Full stop.
Right.
And like, I mean, even if you talk about stone tapes, that still breaks materialism in terms of matter being fundamental.
Mm-hmm.
Gosh, are you delivering the babies right now?
No, I'm leaving the hospital room so that I don't my wife away. And you can kind of be into UFOs without breaking materialism, but it gets really difficult if you want to believe some of these great landmark cases where you've got telepathy involved and, you know, presentiment and poltergeist activity. But with cryptozoology, you can totally just put on those blinders and just go out and say, Bigfoot's an ape, Nessie's a plesiosaur, Mothman was some sort of relict pterosaur or something. I don't even know what...
Yeah, that's a hard one.
The idea that cryptozoologists adopt Mothman is just mind-boggling to me anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you can throw on those blinders. And honestly, I think, you know, I'm still inclined to think that some of those things... I'm not completely opposed to a lot of those ideas.
Don't forget Dogman, the bipedal, wolf-headed, upright, hocked leg thing that for some reason decides to walk upright with hocked legs.
Oh, God.
Perfectly natural, evolved hands, canine.
Yeah. Of course. How could I forget my old buddy, the dog man?
How long have I known you, Tim?
It's either a couple weeks or 10,000 years, somewhere in there.
Because I seem to remember when I first met you, you were way more on the materialist side of the cryptozoology.
Absolutely.
Oh, and then you started listening to this guy who was talking about fairies.
I absolutely was. And this is my true feeling on this. And I've known several people to come through this. And I don't want to speak out of turn, but including the host of the most popular, you know, Bigfoot podcast out there.
Honestly, like, this is something that I've alluded to, and I don't want to go on this rabbit hole too far, but, I've talked to you about this off air, but you know, and let's just go ahead and call a spade a spade. Wes Germer from Sasquatch Chronicles has done a great job of actually looking at the data and changing. He's one of the few people that I've known who's actually changed their opinion by looking at the data. And I used to be super hypercritical of him, hypercritical of him. But he's done it. He looked at this and said, this isn't quite, hats off to you, Wes, if by some, you know, miracle you're listening to this. He's really been what we want all these people to be in terms of looking at the data and saying, this doesn't fit my worldview. Maybe I should change my worldview. He's done a great job of that, because there was a time when he was really, really, really opposed to people who brought in, you know, non-materialist things into the big paradigm.
I think the natural place to start is to start as there's something out there in the woods. It's natural. There's a monster. There's a creature. There's an ape. There's a monkey. There's a relic hominid. And I'm going to figure it out, or people will figure it out someday, or whatever the case may be. But over time, when all of the weirdness starts stacking up, and there's a lot of it, I mean, our book is going to be thick. It's going to be
with two Ks.
It's not, there's not a little bit of it. There's a lot of it. And if you are honest with yourself, eventually you have to go, yeah, I maybe there is a monkey in the woods, but it's a really, really weird monkey.
Well, and to be honest, like, here's the real irony, right? Like, I'm the guy who is all into fairy folklore and, you know, Jungian archetypes and stuff, but like, I'm between me and Tim, I feel like I'm the one who's still like clinging on to monkey in the woods a little bit. Right, Tim?
Yeah. I mean, probably more than me. I'm just, I can't tell you what it is, but I can tell you it's very, very weird. I mean, I think Patrick Harper comes closest, mm-hmm. because he does a very wonderful job of explaining it in ways that I struggle with, that yes, it can leave footprints and hair behind, and it can leave physical evidence. And when people are seeing it, it's absolutely real and solid. You can knock on it, you know, just like the desk in front of you, and it's real, but it's also imaginal and reactive to consciousness. And it's, you know, Fred Beck, who was part of the Ape Canyon incident, they call it, this very famous Bigfoot incident in 1924, which it's been selectively mined to make it sound like a completely natural incident. He comes out in his writing about it, and he says these creatures are not—they're not right. They're not normal. They're not natural. And he comes very close to a co-creation kind of theory when he's writing about this. Now, he's writing about this, I think, in the 60s, but he, you know, he's talking about his experience from the 20s. And he says I think they need us to manifest. Mm.
Yeah, it's and here's the thing that I always get hung up on, is that there are things about Bigfoot encounters that sound astonishingly like what we know about primatology. So pursed lips when hooting, pillow erection, you know, the idea that the hair stands up on end when agitated. There are so many things that really, really correspond to current primatology that it makes me, I get anxious saying that, you know, there's not sort of a primatological basis there.
Fair enough. Well, my point, however, was that in the short, because Tim, I haven't known you super long, maybe a year and a half, somewhere in there.
It's been a little longer. I've done a book a year, so okay. four books, 4 years.
Really? Has it been that long? Wow.
No. Dude,
Four books, 3 years. Four books, 3 years.
3 years might be more accurate.
Maybe.
it's funny. I don't remember time at all, but I remember getting your book and starting to read it in my dentist office while I was waiting and going, huh, this is really good.
Well, and I remember like going to get my watch fixed I remember during a holiday season, I was going to the department store, and it doesn't feel like it was 4 years, 3 or 4 years ago, but maybe it was. Who knows?
What was the name?
So what you're saying is writing repairs both teeth and watches.
Yes. what's the name of your first book?
Beyond the Seventh Gate.
I'm actually going to look it up on the website and see when the first time you came on was. Here it is. 2016. Or no. Yeah, okay,
that feels right.
Actually, nope, that's your actual book review. is this it? Which also looks like 2016. Yes. December 2nd, 2016. I was pretty sure it was in December.
Yeah, that's the one I've heard. So it's been two years and some change.
Okay, good.
And I'm writing some books. Look out, Nick Redfern, I'm coming for you.
Because I was about to ask you guys how long that's been, because I don't remember where in time I am most of the time. But yeah, so that was the first time you were on, so I probably got your book in December or in November, because it didn't take me long to read it, and as soon as I read it, I'm like, you must come on the show immediately.
And I've never looked back.
So. Yeah, and I don't know how long it took us to fall in love, but here we are.
But in that time, I mean, it didn't take you a long period of time to switch from flesh and blood cryptid to something different, because you looked at the evidence, because you weren't closed off to it and set. You were just kind of like, oh, well, that doesn't fit, and you slowly moved into a different view of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I hadn't read John Keel and stuff, you know, before. So, you know, these ideas weren't completely out of nowhere, but it's just a matter of, the other thing is I think in a way you start out as an author and you're like, man, this is some weird stuff. Maybe people are more accepting if it's a natural creature. And then at some point you go, I don't care. I'm writing about everything that's happening. It's all weird. And there were hints of this, even in Beyond the Seventh Gate, I think. There were hints of me going like, wait, a lot of this weird stuff is happening around the same spots. But yeah, it just became too much. There's just too much weirdness and not enough fossil record, say, you know.
Well, I mean, there's that, and there's also, you know, if you were really following this stuff down those pathways of magical practice and consciousness studies, it really opens up the possibility that there's other stuff, you know, at play, which I think is something that I laughed at for the longest time. You know, I mean, like, you know, it just, and when you finally start reading people like Dean Radin, Rupert Sheldrake, Ian Stevenson, Pin Van Lommel, talking about consciousness stuff, talking about magic stuff, it really opens up the fact that, you know, that coupled with basically the science that you read every single day, really opens up the fact that the world is a lot stranger than we ever thought it was.
True.
And with that, like, once you come to that conclusion, everything falls apart. Everything falls apart, you know, because it opens the door for everything.
And, you know, I think getting out there, so, you know, I've done a bunch of paranormal conventions and doing the podcast. I talked to a lot of people, and I went from, boy, I'd really like to find some paranormal witnesses, to, boy, I need to talk to people and draw out their paranormal experiences. Mm-hmm. Because almost everyone has something. Even when they'll say to your face, nope, nothing strange ever happened to me. And then you get them talking, you get them relaxed, and be like, well, there was that one time. Yeah. Well, that one time something really weird happened, you know, and they'll tell you about a UFO or whatever it is, you know. So I became just, through experience, I think, through talking to people, just aware of just how much of this is out there, and that it's very strange stuff. And you know, when the Bigfoot people, if you can get them talking, just like I said, this Bigfoot witness just yesterday, you know, it's just a matter of time before she started talking about ghosts and weird lights. And you know, how can I ignore it?
And Tim is a great evangelist for the Church of Latter-day Bigfoot, because he's he's actually convinced his wife that there's weirdness happening.
She flounders. She goes back.
Oh, but she's no, dude. There's a crack in the hole there. It's
yeah. The jumping Frenchman was big for her. That was like, she was like, whatever's going on here.
Yeah, if people haven't listened to that episode, they need to listen to that episode. I've heard the term jumping Frenchman, but I never knew what it was. And that's just freaky in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, and it was just a listener who just pointed me to the Wikipedia article, like, look at this, isn't this neat? And then we started digging in, it was like, whoa.
Some point I should have you come on and just talk about Flannel Man, so you can take kind of all the stuff you've learned and put it in one place.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, the problem is I don't know what to say about. I say him. It's a group. People aren't always seeing the same thing.
There's not just one.
No, they describe different. It's different people wearing flannel. So
like, there's just one Bigfoot.
So I don't know what. I can tell you the features of this sighting. Right, right. You know, there's some common features and stuff, but as to what he is, I mean, I can guess. And my guess is it's some kind of watcher but for what reason, I don't know.
Well, we'll talk about it in a future show.
Sure, yeah. We'll do let's maybe next week do the dream episode on Strange Familiars.
That sounds good.
It's funny that you mentioned Bigfoot being a singular entity. It's a really fascinating that Microsoft Word is predisposed to autocorrect you whenever you talk about Bigfoot in the plural, but don't say Bigfoots. Hmm. So if you say Bigfoot are often seen doing this or that or the other, they'll try to correct R to is.
Oh, wow.
Come on.
You know, honestly, it was mind-blowing when I it might have even been you, Josh, that mentioned that, you know, people think that there's one Bigfoot, and I thought, what? Like, that never crossed my mind, because it's one thing to believe that there's an undiscovered ape in the woods. It's way weirder to think there's only one.
Yeah, I don't think I ever thought of it that way either, but apparently there are some people who still operate under that sort of idea.
Yeah.
Well, there's this other thing that it's kind of like fits in with that a little bit that you'll find, and especially on the East Coast. I give an example in Don't Look Behind You. There was this guy told me about what he called the Hook Road Werewolf, the story from Maryland. And it was in no way a werewolf. It wasn't a dogman creature they were describing. They were describing a Bigfoot by description. You know, every bit of this thing they described was a Bigfoot. But in their mind, in the 1970s, when they were seeing this thing, Bigfoot lived in California and Oregon. He didn't live in Maryland, you know. So you get a lot of that. So you get a lot of these weird sort of localized names for him, especially on the East Coast and in the South, because, well, Bigfoot doesn't live here. You know, we got... I'm trying to think, there was another guy who told me that in Pennsylvania, he said, we don't have Bigfoot. We have this, and he gave me another folk name for it. I forget what it was, but he described a Bigfoot. He said it was years before we realized oh, that's Bigfoot. That's the same thing. We always thought it was this, you know, this other thing, whatever the name was.
All right. Well, that seems like a good place to end.
Okay.
So in the end, we've determined that whatever happened to this poor kid, he got through it safely, and there's no easy explanation to how he stayed safe.
There really isn't, and I'm so happy he's healthy and seems no worse for the wear. I mean, he seems, you know, he's got a new best friend, a bear.
and the other criteria that fits is that David would also say from the missing 411 stuff that people who do survive and do come back are often too young to tell us what, you know, to be able to express what really happened.
Right.
And here we go. He's three, and he said he hung out with a bear.
Well, I like I said, I just wish someone would ask him a few simple questions, like, did the bear walk on all fours, and did he take you anywhere?
Yeah.
Was there a roof over your head ever? How did you stay warm, and what did you eat?
Yeah, yeah. And I doubt that's going to happen, because I think the family's just happy he's back, as they should be.
Yeah, and who can blame him? I mean, wow, I'm so happy the kid is safe. I really am.
All right, thank you guys.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
And good luck with
StrangeFamiliars.com.
And good luck with your kids, Josh.
Thanks. Hope they don't get taken by bears.
And a special thanks to all my patrons who help make this podcast possible. And a special shout out to those pledging $10 or more. Tim. An extra special thanks to Tim. Allison Cook. Super Inframan, Andy McNamara, Bart Ooms, Charles Beauregard, Craig Cisernos, Eric Citron, Jose A., Kevin, Scott Morris Everett, Sean Cosgrove, Robert Groom, Roland Belstadt, Mike McGuire, Riker and Stark, John Rutledge Foster III, Sasha Org, Christopher Vaughn, Samantha, Ben Crow, American Rambler, Carla Mahoney, John Eddy, Jennifer Campbell, Janet Runyon, Nathan Syria, Chris, Mark Brady, William Lovelace, Patricia Giaquinta, Kevin Schreck, Paul Buscini, and Alfred Tuttle. Thank you all so very much.
Come in. Do you read me? Do you understand the numbers pouring over your connection? Singing, soaking into our transmission. 21, 34, 55, 89, 144. Whence came this dream that haunts my mind? Behind a curtain, outside of time. Can you hear the knowledge plays, the whirring of the world? Of the universe, ventricles and tetrahedra, chambers number 1597, and counting, and counting. Can you hear the ballet plays, the whirring of the world? Can you hear the ballet plays, the whirring of the world? Can you hear?
Have been listening to Where Did the Road Go? This show is made possible in part from our Patreons, and we thank you and everyone listening for helping us continue this exploration of the strange. You can always find everything Where Did the Road Go related at www.wheredidtheroadgo.com, and thank you so much for your support.